Newell's got some time off. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be with you here on the Newell Norman Show. I want to quickly put a bow on that last hour's conversation because it really was troubling to me. I was already upset, confused, and unsure about what happened on Sunday when MISO, the regional transmission authority, ordered Clico and Entergy to turn off electricity to 100,000 customers. The narrative that had perpetrated through the media, and I use the word perpetrated intentionally, was that there was not enough electricity to go around. That because we had two nuclear power plants offline, that the power generation was insufficient to meet the demand. And so it created this sudden emergency that MISO ordered Clico and Entergy to turn off power to 100,000 customers. But the more we learn, the more we understand that we don't understand what happened, and it's not nearly as simple as it's being suggested that it was. And it starts to maybe answer some of the questions about why did we have no notice? Why did we have no opportunity to conserve before we ran out of power? And why did it have to happen right now? That didn't make sense before. And now we're starting to understand, I think, why. Because if, like the Public Service Commissioner Eric Scrimeta suggested, it really did not have anything to do with supply and demand. He said that both nuclear power plants had been out for days and there wasn't a sudden drop in supply and that there's something else going on here. But MISO would not tell him, whose job it is to oversee and regulate these things, what had happened. We're going to have an in-depth investigation and conversation to really find out what happened. And I think it will all come to light. I think we will find out. It's just going to take time and effort here. And I think that over the holiday weekend, those who were making the decisions were afraid to explain their decisions because their corporate communications people, their lawyers, and their bosses probably weren't available because it was a holiday weekend. So they just shut their mouths and didn't say anything after this order to turn off the electricity. Well, mouths will be open and things will be said. And we will get an understanding of it. I just hope we don't run into any more problems like this until then. For those of you who did lose electricity, and I'd probably be angrier if I did. I did not personally lose electricity. For those of you that did, that suffered in the heat and it was inconvenient, for those of you who did and couldn't operate important medical equipment, for those businesses that had to close and could not generate revenue, for the fairs and festivals that were shut down because they had no electricity, I think if I were in that number, I'd be even more upset. But please know that we're going to continue to follow this. We will get to the bottom of this, and we will have answers. In the meantime, Tuesday is the day that Newell always likes to talk to what he calls New Orleans difference makers, and this week is no different. This week's guest, Lowry Cruz, is founder and CEO of an organization called 18th Ward. We asked him to come on to tell us about this nonprofit that builds community through high-quality, affordable sports programming and workforce development for youth and families from every neighborhood in New Orleans. Lowry, thank you for joining us here on the Newell Norman Show. I'm Dave Cohen. Nice to talk to you.
Dave, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
You know, we all know how much we love sports. You know, we look at how much, you know, we follow our favorite sports teams, how we metaphorically live and die with their successes and failures. And we talk about how we all who participated in sports learned valuable life lessons from it. But I love that what you've been able to do is take this passion that so many of us have for sports and turn it into something that hopefully makes our community a better place to live, a safer place, and offers children who otherwise may not have mentorship, guidance, and meaning in their lives an opportunity to find that through sports.
Yeah, we've seen the power of sports over the last 5 years since we started the 18th Ward. We had 40 kids playing soccer, in City Park out in front of the Art Museum. And this past school year, we created over 12,000 opportunities for our kids to play and work and be together across all 17 wards of New Orleans. So we've got kids from over 100 schools, 22 different zip codes. And the power of sports is real. We can go into a school, we can go into a park, we can go into a gymnasium, and we see that sports really does bring people together and build the kind of relationships that our city needs. And in order to overcome some of the challenges, like you just mentioned with electricity, we can't solve that problem, but we can do a lot for our youth and families. They deserve it. And the problems that we see as an organization from our vantage point are all solvable. And so we're excited to do our part and continue to build partnerships with other great organizations that are doing work for our kids and families. So the future of youth opportunities is bright in New Orleans.
Well, you answered one of my questions about why 18th Ward, and now I understand, because you are the 18th Ward in addition to the 17 that the city's divided up into. But I want to understand better how you started this and why. You said that you had these kids playing soccer in City Park, and you saw that the camaraderie, that the lessons learned through sports. I was kind of surprised it's soccer that was what started it all, and I want to know why soccer. But what led you to have this first foray into bringing, whether they're at risk or not, kids together to play soccer? What was the inspiration for that, and how did it grow from there?
I was inspired by my own students and my own children. I was a public school teacher and principal for 15 years, spent some time in Central City in New Orleans and then in New Orleans East. And my students always excelled in the classroom. But after school, they wanted to stick around and, you know, be together, stay with their friends, hang out. So I started introducing different sports, and soccer really caught on. Nationally, only about 8% of youth soccer players identify as Black, and the majority of our population in New Orleans does. So we needed to expose more of our kids to soccer, baseball, swim lessons, because they deserve that opportunity, and it's mostly unaffordable. So I started doing free soccer programs at KIPP East in New Orleans East. My five-year-old son was in kindergarten, and he was playing soccer with third and fourth graders. And mostly working on the same skills. So I decided, you know, as a good teacher, if I can introduce soccer to kids at a younger age, that's going to increase their opportunities in middle school and high school. And soccer gave me opportunities growing up. I played my whole life. I played through high school and college. And so it was a natural starting point for me. But what I realized is that our kids and families wanted exposure to lots of different sports. So we provide flag football, basketball, gymnastics, softball, baseball, and just a variety of things, because we want our kids to be active. We want them to find a place of belonging. We want them to make friends. I mean, that's how I made friends growing up. That's how I built a positive identity. It helped improve my physical and mental health. So we're really using sports to solve a lot of the challenges that our youth are facing.
And you made the decision here recently to join the New Orleans Coalition, which aims at reducing crime in our community by presenting opportunities to youth, amongst other things, so that rather than out breaking the law, committing crimes, you have kids competing in sports, learning life lessons, and becoming better individuals, and hopefully are healthier individuals, and thereby better adults.
So, yeah, from ages 3 to 13, we have athletes playing a variety of different sports through fall, winter, spring, and summer programs. And then from age 14 to 24, we have a workforce program so that as our kids age out of sports with us and perhaps get more involved in their school sports, they can still stay connected to the community and be contributors, but as leaders. So they coach, they referee, and they mentor the next generation. So from 14 to 24, you can make $15 to $25 an hour, progressively get more responsibility. So that leadership development is really crucial. And we can start that at early ages with the communication and the persistence and the teamwork. And then when we really see things come full circle is when our 5-year-olds become 15-year-olds, and then they start working in the same programs and in the same neighborhoods where they grew up playing. So long-term change is going to take some time, but in the first 5 years, we've seen huge demand. And so we're really interested in scaling our models, more parks, more schools, and more opportunities. Our goal is to create 20,000 youth opportunities in this upcoming school year. And that's going to take a lot of work from us, and it's going to take a lot of folks who are willing to be great partners and increase access to spaces around our city so that our kids can play. I mean, I think big picture, we're asking ourselves, how many kids should we be serving as a city? And I think if we add up all the organizations who are currently serving our kids through sports and other activities, I don't think we've gotten there yet. And so we're excited to sort of advocate for more. 20,000 this year, hopefully that turns into 50,000 over the next couple of years. But I'm really excited for our city leaders to just take a look at the data and say, where are we? Where do we need to be? And how can we get people in a room together and make this happen? Because I believe that the problems we see for our kids and families when it comes to youth services are very solvable.
I love this. We're talking with Lowry Cruz, founder and CEO of 18th Ward. And what I find unique about this program that I don't recall hearing about many others is that you have a vision that not only addresses the idle hands, idle minds kind of problem that we've talked about for a long, long time amongst our youth, but you don't, after they're done being children, just say, okay, you're old enough now, we're done with you, go find something else. You want to continue to develop and grow these young people beyond just participating in sports programs to then learning how to help manage the organization, to participate in mentoring and leading children beyond that. That is a vision that I've not really heard before in an organization like yours that really aims to not only get kids off the streets and out of a life of crime, but develop them into adults that then will contribute to our society as well.
It has to be a comprehensive approach. I mean, I love providing a summer camp, but if there's nothing after school during the school year, then our kids lack the opportunities that they need and they deserve to remain healthy and safe. And so we are looking from early childhood, matriculating to and through college and career. I mean, I've seen it my entire career. My middle school students struggled going to high school because they didn't have the support that they needed. My high school students struggled to graduate college or to get into a career that would pay them and train them in ways that they deserve. And so it's about more than sports, but sports is certainly what's getting people out to the park and getting them engaged in something bigger than themselves, whether it's a team when they're 7 or 8 years old or a group of young people that they're leading in a program on a Saturday afternoon in Gentilly. So our coaches are great leaders and role models for our young athletes, and that's important to us, but what's most important is that they have a good resume when they finish working with us, that they get letters of support for their job and college applications, and that we really invest in them in the long term, because the kids who are playing basketball right now, the kids who are playing tennis right now, are going to be the ones who are leading our city in the future. And now's the time to invest deeply in our young people.
Yeah, we want them in positions of leadership, not in prisons. We're talking with Lowry Cruz, founder and CEO of 18th Ward. When we come back, we'll find out how you can get involved if you want to support 18th Ward through your time or your donations. We'll ask Lowry Ward how everybody can help him in this goal. Getting some texts from people who have had opportunities to work with him. One says, my company recently worked with 18th Ward, and we were very impressed with how Lowry and his organization functioned in the city. Truly a first-class organization. organization. We're back to find out how you can help after this on WWL. In for Newell Normand on this Tuesday, the day when he always likes to talk to New Orleans difference makers, and I'm having the honor and pleasure of talking with Lowry Cruz, founder and CEO of 18th Ward, an organization that is getting children involved in sports programs, a variety of different athletic programs, in an effort to give them something to do and help them develop as human beings off the streets, away from a life of crime. And he said they serve all 17 wards. So, Lowry, anybody can participate in this program, right? If someone's got a kid, knows a kid that could benefit from this, how can they get children involved?
We'd love for families to visit our website, the18thward.org, and check out our opportunities. Send us an email, get on our email list, sign your child up for some programs. Follow us on social media at the 18th Ward. I think the challenge for us over the last 5 years has been meeting the demand. So right now, if you do try to register your child, odds are they're going to end up being on a wait list for swim lessons or gymnastics or indoor soccer. And so we're really trying to work with our partners to access more space so that we can accommodate more students and create more opportunities. So folks can visit our website. You can make a donation. We take pride in being a lean organization. We believe we can create 20,000 opportunities by raising $5 million this year. And it sounds like a lot when I say $5 million, but when I think about the number of young people that we're serving through sports, the number of young people that we're hiring and training to develop their leadership, it comes out to about $250 per child. And most families who are participating in youth sports spend well beyond that amount, sometimes for just the season. And this will help support our kids all year long through four different seasons during and after school. And so we appreciate any donations. We're actively building partnerships. The City Health Department has become a big partner this summer, helping us provide swim lessons for 700 young people. We're getting support from the Dryads YMCA and Loyola and Newman and the JCC, allowing us to use their pools to train lifeguards and teach young people. So it's going to require partnerships. We'd love to enroll more students, and it's going to require some additional fundraising. Most of our families, they're unable to afford the average youth participation fee. But what we've realized is that just making it affordable really goes a long way to keeping folks engaged and making sure that the cost is not a barrier to a child's participation.
Obviously money, and yeah, $5 million does sound like a lot of money, but clearly you've been very successful in raising money thus far, but also these partnerships you talked about. So someone can go to your website and they can make a donation there, but what if they have space available? What if they have athletic fields, swimming pools, or other facilities that they want to partner with you? Are you looking for additional partners now to offer more athletic facilities?
Absolutely. They can email us at the18thward@gmail.com.
And that's the number 18?
The number 18thward@gmail.com, where we've started working with the DA's office in Nord to activate Hardin Park and the 7th Ward, just steps away from St. Aug. We're working with University of New Orleans to increase access to their beautiful space on campus so we can create more opportunities. So absolutely. If you have questions about programs for your children, if you have questions about jobs for your teenagers, if you want to be a partner, if you've got space, if you want to donate or volunteer, it's going to take the entire community to reach some ambitious goals. But I've met countless people who are excited about what we're doing, who are invested in what we're doing, and believe that this is, you know, one of the things our city needs to do in order to have a brighter future.
Have you been able to see personally the successes that your organization has enabled through getting these children into these sports programs? Are you able to see firsthand when you go out and talk to some of these kids how if they weren't playing sports with your organization, that God only knows what they'd be subject to or up to?
We've got a lot of young people with a lot of great stories to tell. I'll speak about my full-time staff. Over half of our full-time staff came through our workforce development program. Several of them were my former students in middle school. So Coach Singleton, that leads our NFL flag football program, was my student in seventh and eighth grade. I coached him in every sport after school and have mentored him through high school, through college, through all the challenges that he's faced. And I'm proud of him every single day for leading our kids and sort of giving the same pep talks that I gave him when he was a young athlete. And so I think it just takes people like Coach Singleton who understand the value of sports, not because it helps them win or get a college scholarship, but because it helps them be a part of the community. It helps them build positive relationships, and it helps them motivate our kids through some of the ups and downs of growing up.
Anything else you want to share with our listeners as you tell us about 18th Ward? I'm kind of surprised. You've been up and running for 5 years now, and I feel like as the news director here at WWL, I have my finger on a lot of the pulse of the community, but I've not had the opportunity to learn about your organization before. What else should I know about 18th Ward as you're now 5 years into this mission to make our city a better place through youth sports and then continuing on to career development for young adults?
I think the thing to know is that we're just getting started. And that there's going to be more opportunities for kids in our city because they deserve it. And so I think we don't do a lot of marketing because, for example, when we started our summer registration, our gymnastics and swim lessons filled up within 30 minutes of launching registration. So we don't do a ton of marketing because we don't want to have to turn kids and families away. But if you've got a park in your neighborhood that's too quiet and you want some activities that are close to home, we'd love to be there to support your neighborhood and your young people. Because in every neighborhood, there's kids who want to play and there's teenagers who need a good job and need people that will invest with them and be part of their village and be part of their network. So I encourage folks to check us out on social media. Come observe one of our programs, see our young leaders in action. I mean, it's youth-led youth programming. It doesn't get much better than that because you really see our kids thriving in a lot of different ways, and you see the potential, and it helps understand our vision for a stronger community and a stronger future.
All part of what 18th Ward wants to do and also what the New Orleans Coalition aims to do. We've seen this growth of hundreds and hundreds of organizations and individuals and businesses coming together with the common goal of fighting crime in the city of New Orleans. And I think it's hard to argue that over the last couple of years that the New Orleans Coalition, through organizations like yours, hasn't been a part of the solution that has seen crime coming down. And that is always a good thing. Lowry Cruz, give us that website one more time if people want to get involved, take part in your services, or donate.
Yes, please visit us at the18thward.org. Thank you so much for your time and the opportunity to speak about our organization.
Well, thank you for what you are doing to help our community. And I look forward, now that I know about you, to hearing a lot more about your successes and watching the growth of your organization and helping us here in the community do what's got to be done to have a safe and healthy place to live for everyone.
The best is yet to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Lowry Cruz here on WWL. How'd you like to see Mumford & Sons in concert? I hear they put on a hell of a show. Well, WWL has your tickets to see Mumford & Sons and Friends Railroad Revival Tour Sunday at Waldenburg Park. Go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win a pair of tickets. Join the English Folk Rock Celebration on New Orleans Riverfront. Sing along with Mumford and Sons and Friends, including Trombone Shorty. Coming up June 3rd. Go to WWL.com/contest and register, courtesy of Live Nation and WWL. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman, and we are starting to see more questions than answers about the widespread power outages on Sunday. 100,000 customers with only moments' notice ordered to shut down. And neither Entergy nor Clico truly understand why MISO, the regional transmission organization, ordered them to turn off the power, at least according to the statements they've released. Clico said that they are working to understand and they are working to investigate the cause of the outage. Entergy says they're continuing to try to understand the directive to suddenly turn off the power. Well, if they don't even understand why it happened, how can we understand why it happened? And Eric Scrametta told us earlier, and if you didn't hear it, go to Newell's page and click on the podcast and listen to it, or use the rewind function on the Odyssey app to go back and listen to him explain. He doesn't believe that this had anything to do with a shortage of electricity. He doesn't believe that the supply was greater than the demand. He doesn't believe the narrative that's out there that it's because two nuclear power plants were offline that suddenly, without notice, warning, or opportunity to do anything about it, we had to turn off electricity to 100,000 customers across southeast Louisiana. One person texts us and says, Dave, with respect to the power outages and you saying, quote, we will get answers, I do not share your optimism. The text goes on to say, we have entered into a realm led by the current national political climate where those people don't answer to the public anymore. I don't know that you're wrong. I do know that we're in an era where more elected officials across the board, locally, nationally, feel like they don't have to answer to the media. I think the media has been portrayed in a light that they may not be trusted as a watchdog by some segments of our society anymore, and some politicians believe that they don't answer to the media. And I don't know that you obviously are talking about President Donald Trump when you talk about the current national political climate, but just look here at home. Mayor LaToya Cantrell never speaks to the media anymore. Does not hold news conferences, does not have public appearances, and refuses to answer questions. And that proliferates through her organization with her staff and beyond. They don't feel like they have to answer for their actions or answer to the media, and they don't. So I don't think it's just a national political climate. I think it's an entitlement feeling amongst politicians at many levels. And not all. I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but some feel like they don't have to answer to the public, to the media, or to anyone else. Charles, thanks for calling. You are on the Newell Norman Show. I'm Dave Cohen on WWL.
Good morning, Dave.
How you doing, Charles?
Fine, thank you. Let me say first thing, do you blame LaToya Cantrell for not talking to the media?
What do you mean?
It's kind of like why Biden hid. I mean, they have nothing good to say. Everything they touch turns to dust.
But I do blame her. I do think that all elected officials should be held accountable and should answer for their actions. And I'll be honest with you, LaToya Cantrell, when she was first elected 7-some years ago, did come on this program with Newell Norman. After he asked her some biting, difficult questions about some very big issues facing this city, she never came on again.
Never saw her again. That's it.
No.
Absolutely.
Didn't want to be asked the tough questions.
They should be. They should be held accountable for their actions. But, you know, what can I say? I was calling about the Entergy deal. I'm not a big proponent. I mean, I worked there for almost 40 years. But I will say that whatever the issue was as to why the load shedding happened, they'll find out what it was, whether it was somebody fell asleep at the wheel or whatever. But the main thing I wanted to let people know, and it doesn't do any good when you're sitting in your house in 90-something degree weather sweating, energy only makes money when that meter's turning. And right now, or has been for a while, the bean counters are running the company. So all they care about is the stock price. So when the electricity's off, you're not, they're not making any money.
Yeah, but the two have to be related. You know, obviously, and I think that that's a point I've made many times over the years when people get angry, whether it's Entergy, Clico, SWEPCO, whoever your power provider is, Washington, St. Tammany Electric Cooperative, people get angry and feel like they don't want to turn the power back on or they don't want to do what it takes to prevent the power from going out. But clearly, they want you purchasing electricity from them. They want your power on. Yeah. They want your AC running. They want you to buy that electricity. And I think you talk about their only concern is to the shareholders. Well, I think most corporations, their primary concern is to the shareholders. If they can keep their customers happy, they're good. They like that. But ultimately, they want to keep the shareholders happy. But one of the best ways to keep the shareholders happy is to keep profits up. And when it comes to power companies, selling electricity is the best way to keep power, to keep profits up, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. That's it. I just wanted to make that point. Just I know it doesn't keep anybody cool, but like I said, that, you know, it's a little different than phone company or landline phone companies or cable companies, so forth and so on. When that meter's not turning, you're not paying for it. Of course, you're not getting it, but that's a whole another story.
Yeah,
but that's
indeed.
It.
Well, Charles, I thank you for listening, and I appreciate your call. 504-260-1870, the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. I don't think that we're at a point now where we can make conclusions or successfully point fingers and blame, because what I've learned today is we actually know less about what happened than we thought we did. That now... And it may not be until, what, June 17th when the Public Service Commission meets, and I think it's a week from today when the New Orleans City Council meets, that we'll get some answers. But I don't know how much confidence I have that we'll get all of the answers. I think it's going to take some serious digging. It's going to take some investigating. It's going to take more than just getting statements from officials who come before regulators who try to put their spin on it and to explain what happened. What I do know is I don't know what happened. And that concerns me, that if Entergy and Clico don't know why they were ordered to turn off power to 100,000 customers. And when Public Service Commissioner Eric Scrimeta called MISO, the organization that told Clico and Entergy to turn off the power, they couldn't tell him or wouldn't tell him why they had to order that power outage, those power outages, that those are red flags and those are uh-oh moments when we have to get to the bottom of this. Am I over-exaggerating the seriousness of the situation? Yes, 100,000 people lost power for a few hours in stifling heat. Was it the end of the world for them? No, I haven't heard about anyone dying. I haven't heard about traffic signals going out causing car crashes. I haven't heard about medical equipment failing and people dying as a result of not having it. But I do know that a lot of businesses lost a lot of money. I know that organizations that were running events at the time lost a lot of money. And I do know that whether this specific instance was cataclysmic, it is telling that something went wrong somewhere. Someone screwed up something, or we would not have been in this situation, and we need to get to the bottom of that. Don, thanks for calling. You are on WWL. How you doing, Don?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I've been listening for a while now, and based on what Commissioner Scrimeta said, if he's correct, and this is about the wind and the wind power and the solar power falling off a little bit, causing some kind of discrepancy in the frequencies or whatever, and they're pushing us to go to more and more solar and wind, this is going to happen more and more frequently, and it's going to be longer and longer. So you know what? I am so thankful I have a whole home gas generator because I don't have to put up with it.
You know, Don, and I hesitate to say right now that we can draw a conclusion that we need to stop expanding solar and wind power because someone may have messed up on balancing the frequencies that are generated from nuclear, gas, coal, solar, wind altogether. I don't know that you can blame wind and solar for the problem. But maybe you can, and we won't know immediately, the people who manage the system.
I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that. But what I am saying is this. Wind and solar are not reliable like nuclear or coal or gas because we can't control when the wind blows, and we can't control when the clouds come.
No, you're right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right, Don. It is less consistent, no doubt. But the question remains, if it's managed correctly, can it still be an asset? I think nuclear is the ultimate answer to everything. I think France has proven that nuclear power is the most reliable, most effective, and actually most friendly to the environment. And I think we're finally getting to a point where we're far enough removed from Chernobyl and Three Mile Island, which were the reason we stopped building new nuclear power plants, because people freaked out at those incidents in Chernobyl and on Three Mile Island. I think we're probably far enough removed from it now that maybe, just maybe, we can start turning back to nuclear, building new nuclear facilities in this country and having more reliable sources of power through that. Great point. I appreciate it. France is proving it can work. Are there challenges with nuclear? Sure. Do we still not know what to do with spent fuel rods? Sure. But they're working on ways to re-energize them and safely store them. So maybe nuclear is the future. 11:55, Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. Jeff, thanks for calling on WWL. You're on the Newell Norman Show. I'm Dave Cohen. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm pretty good, my man.
What's on your mind?
Well, I think we're going to get some answers on this power outage, because they cut power to one very important customer in Muro, the Valero refinery.
Yeah, I've heard several, several chemical plants, refineries lost power. And
that's why they had all that black smoke coming out the flare for, I don't know how many hours, Saturday evening.
Sunday
evening. That's a big, significant fine that's going to have to be paid. If you think Valero is going to bend over and take it, they're going to demand, you know.
Well, Jeff, you highlight one of the problems that we were talking about earlier, was if you don't give people notice when you know you're going to turn the power off, particularly when you're talking about in an industrial setting, there are things they got to do. There are shutdown procedures they should go through before the power is turned off, right? There are things that should be done to preserve safety and preserve loss of chemicals and processes and money, honestly, when you get down to it, right?
Correct. I mean, there's things that could have been done if they had been given any kind of warning to at least lessen it. It may not have, you know, it still might have happened, but I don't think it would have been to the extent that that it was.
Yeah, I had a text early this morning. Now, normally, I'm on from 5 a.m. to 6 a.m., and this morning during that show, I had someone text in and say that they had a loved one who worked at one of the chemical plants, and they said it actually created a dangerous situation where they had to go into emergency shutdown, and people could have been harmed, and things could have gone much worse. Thank God nobody was, and nothing catastrophic happened. And I think it does highlight that MISO really need to order these immediate shutdowns with no opportunity for warnings?
Right. Correct. They're not going to just bend over. You know, they're going to demand to know answers of what happened, because they don't want to pay that fine.
So you believe that not only through the Public Service Commission, through the City Council, through media inquiries, you think that with the power of corporate America behind them, that there's the opportunity here to really find out what happened, because we're talking about big bucks.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you lose power and you sit and sweat, and that's one thing, but they've got millions of dollars to put behind it to find out what happened.
Jeff, I appreciate your call, and thank you for pointing that out here on WWL. A lot of people are texting me saying that I heard in the news that it was because of the two nuclear power plants that were shut down. Well, that was the rhetoric that was fed out. And if you heard Eric Scrimeta earlier, the Public Service Commissioner, when it comes down to it, that may not be truly what was the cause behind all of this. And it's going to take some time before we fully understand it. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. Coming up next hour, we're going to set up the lunchtime buffet for you. It's a potluck buffet, which means you bring whatever you want to it, and we'll chew on it, we'll discuss it, and we'll open up the lines here on the Newell Norman Show for you to talk about just about anything you want, whether it's the power outages, on Sunday and the vast questions that now surround that, whether it's the recapture of three more inmates who escaped the Orleans Parish Prison. I think a lot of us were starting to doubt that they were going to be able to catch the five remaining escapees of the 10 who got away, because remember, they caught five pretty quickly, but then there was this long drought of anyone caught. Well, yesterday they caught three more. Two more remain at large. You confident they're going to catch them all at this point? We can put that on the buffet. But really, anything you want to talk about, we will get Jeff Palermo in here next hour to help us break down what the road to Omaha looks like for the LSU baseball team, the only Louisiana collegiate baseball team that made the NCAA baseball tournament. They'll be hosting a regional, and if they win that, a super regional in their efforts to get back to the College World Series. So we'll have that for you as well here on WWL. Stay tuned. Coming up in the news, you'll hear more on what Eric Scrametta had to say earlier on this program. We'll get you caught up on everything else you need. Then we'll be back afterwards to have that lunchtime buffet on WWL.